Welcome to the Elements of Being podcast, where I dissect and explore the minds and habits of psychologists, filmmakers, writers, and industry icons. Essentially, we learn what makes them flip the switch to achieve great feats, goals, and milestones, and a chance to geek out over the psychology behind human behavior. Today is meant for my fellow film geeks. If you have ever watched an incredible scene during your favorite movie and TV show and wondered, how do they pull that off? Or how do they get access to a place like that? We shed a little light on the process during my interview with Stuart Berbrick, a Hollywood location manager and scout. We typically see the movie creation experience from the perspective of actors, actresses, and directors. My interview with Stuart brought in a unique behind-the-scenes look and different perspective into the on-screen entertainment that I admire and enjoy so much. Most likely, you've seen Stuart's professional contributions if you've seen the blockbuster movies Transformers 3 and Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight, as well as the shows Sense 8 and The Patriot, especially The Patriot on Amazon. Season 1 is brilliantly filmed and written. So here's what we discussed: how COVID-19 affects the present and future of Hollywood, the true impact of Hollywood on the economy, the path and day-to-day of a location scout and manager for film and television, the process of aligning locations with the vision of the writers and directors, the challenges of finding and securing the locations you see on screen, the evolution of Hollywood films from permanent sets to unique locations, and the current trends in Hollywood. So with this being said, let's jump in. Stuart, it's rare to interview one of my best friends on the podcast, and thank you so much for sharing the table with me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This is exciting. I've been a fan of yours for quite some time now.
Well, the feeling is mutual, and this is an interesting day for me as well, because then I really get the opportunity to dissect what you do as a location manager. So I think there is plenty to learn on my end, and I'm sure a lot to take away for everyone else listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just thinking about our present time, and over the last few weeks, COVID-19 has certainly affected all of us, some more personally than others. I believe the virus infected a producer in your last film project. What was your first thought when you heard that someone contracted the virus on one floor below your office?
Yeah, you know, back in early March, you know, as we know, this story changes daily with the sadness of it and the more we know. And, you know, I was currently working on a pilot. We were getting ready to film in the first half of March. And yeah, we had learned of someone on another show. It wasn't my show. It was another show within our studio area. And, you know, we had found out that someone had tested positive, and rumors spread, as they tend to do in any office or type setting. And, you know, it was a lot of confusion, a lot of unknown. I think the whole effect of things became really real. We're almost perplexed as to what we needed to focus on. You know, it was a hard challenge to pretend like everything is fine when you're watching the news or seeing the headlines. And now we're finding out people within our industry, professionals that we know and work with, are potentially getting sick from this. So it was a nerve-wracking and sort of an, you know, like I said, an unknown was happening. Were we going to continue? Were we going to pause? What was going to happen? And then, you know, with the days later, and as more information comes out around the world and within the U.S., you know, a decision was made to pull the plug and everyone stop working and shut down. So it was an interesting experience, to say the least, to be sort of working one moment and then not, you know, soon after.
Yeah, like many industries, your industry was shut down worldwide for the sake of social distancing and containment. I'm not sure people recognize how that impacts a significant sector of the economy. We often recognize the actors and actresses and directors the most in the social conversation about film and television. From the bottom up, though, there are a staggering number of players and services that ultimately contribute to what we see on the screen. Can you describe the role of your industry in many local areas like Chicago?
I think I read a statistic. It was close to 120,000 to 130,000 production professionals around the world essentially lost their job almost overnight due to the COVID-19. And that has a serious effect on the economy. I mean, it's ironic. We're all, you know, sort of sheltered in place, social distancing in our homes, and we're watching a lot of TV. And, you know, we're the ones sort of responsible for getting this content out there, and we're the ones who make it. And to not be working and producing entertainment has an effect. And, you know, certainly our industry is massively robust. And I'd like to argue that we're probably, you know, the Hollywood industry is probably America's greatest export. You know, we produce content that the world watches and appreciates and loves. And, you know, on a local level, Chicago our industry here in Chicago is incredible. You know, it seems as though every year we are contributing more and more revenue into this city. You know, the way it sort of works is, you know, Illinois, along with a lot of other competitive states, have tax incentives. You know, Illinois is currently 30%. So that's a lot of money that we are sort of putting out there to Hollywood and enticing them to come to our great state, our great city of Chicago. And it directly affects everybody. I mean, it's a big, robust industry here now that rivals anything in LA. You know, you could argue that the amount of work in Chicago, it's, you know, it's up there with New York. Georgia has a very healthy industry, and everyone's affected. Just because we're not working, that means our vendors aren't working. The fallout trickles down to so many assets and people and businesses. And, you know, it, like anything, the trickle down it can affect a lot of things.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but typically in the negotiation with the city or some type of locale, you would agree to hire a certain number of people or services from that area, correct?
That's correct. You know, part of the way a studio can qualify for the incentives is hiring a certain percentage of local employees. You know, I think a lot of times in Chicago right now, you have probably 90% of the crew, the production crew, and that includes everyone from the production staff in the office to the assistant directors, to the electrical department, the camera department, the craft service, costumes, hair and makeup, locations department. You know, 90% of these people are local Chicagoans, and a smaller group, you know, are certainly brought in from, you know, Los Angeles, New York, the UK. I think we're lucky that we're able to do that in a city where you have so many people that are experienced. And that's just the ability and the beauty of work continuing to come to Chicago. And with that, you know, you get an experienced crew with amazing facilities and incredible vendors, you know, everything from lumber yards for the construction department to generators for the electrical department and camera houses and porta potty vendors to, you know, you name it. We touch a lot of avenues and a lot of people with our industry. We're essentially putting on a major event every day, and with that comes all of those needed services.
Let's say the social gates open June 1st. How soon after that do you think Hollywood could begin filming again?
It's a good question. You know, I certainly have thought about what it might look like after things start to normalize. I certainly talked to friends of mine that do what I do and have the same sort of thoughts. But I think at this point, everyone's just sort of waiting to see what happens. I can certainly imagine the studios are feverishly working on implementation of new practices and things we do while on location or when we're together. We're normally within our industry, you know, a large production for television or a feature film, you know, you're looking at 150 to 200 person crew. That's a lot of people working together in close proximity. So I often wonder what it's going to look like. Are people going to be scared to go back to work? You know, are locations going to open up their door? I think there's got to be some really strong positivity and science that will reassure people that we can go back to normal. But I certainly wonder, and I do think that there might be some apprehension and some fear to open your doors to strangers when you know, your home is, you know, your sanctuary. That's what we've been instructed to do, is to stay in place, stay home. That's your safe space. And, you know, I wonder, you know, will people be open to allowing strangers in to film a scene, film a show within their doors? And I think it's a big question that I don't quite know yet. I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah, I don't think people realize when watching movies, sometimes the locations that they see could actually be a neighbor's living room or family room that you essentially have rented out for 1 to 3 days.
Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes longer and sometimes reoccurring. So building those relationships, which is part of what I do, is incredibly vital. You know, you need the trust, and it works both ways. And it'll be interesting to navigate that going forward.
I wanted to dig a little bit into your life and your path to now. And I know you've lived everywhere from the West to East Coast, now the Midwest. What was your specific path in becoming a location manager?
Wow. Well, if you'd asked me 10 years ago if I'd be doing this, I don't know if I would have believed you. My path is, you're right, I have been all over. You know, I was born in Cincinnati, moved to St. Louis in second grade. That's where I tend to think I grew up through high school there. Ended up playing soccer Division I at a school in upstate New York, Binghamton University. Ended up walking away from the sport and transferred to Murray State University down in Kentucky, where I received a degree in advertising. When I decided to graduate, and I landed in Chicago, followed a job. I had worked for Hyatt Hotels as a marketing manager for them. And that's when I changed, I guess, my career path. You know, I had been working for Hyatt, which was a great company, and I happened to be on sort of the on-site team to oversee a TV commercial that they were shooting at one of the hotel properties. And while there, you know, I happened to just be in awe of that lifestyle and that work. You know, ever since I was a kid, I was a huge Steven Spielberg fan. As anyone who is anything, you know, has any interest in film would also agree. I mean, he was the man. And I read his biography as a young kid, definitely the biggest book I had ever read at that time. And, you know, there was always this thing in the back of my mind that I always wanted to work in this industry. And I didn't quite know exactly what path I wanted to do. But while I was sort of overseeing this commercial from a site rep standpoint, you know, I met a location manager and I picked his brain. I thought it was the coolest job in the world. I was like, so wait, you get to work on a movie, you get a script, you read the script, and then you go out and find the location and then you pitch them. I'm like, that sounds like the most amazing job I've ever heard of. And you know, and I think he had some advice back to me saying, hey, you know, it's, you have a pretty good gig yourself, which was a way of saying, it was, you know, there's more to it, but in my mind, that's what the job was. And that sounded incredibly glamorous and exciting. And that's what sort of hooked me in. And it, you know, I made, sort of a crazy decision to walk away from this great job out of college with benefits and a salary and everything that goes with that, to start at the bottom, being incredibly green. And I kept in touch with this location manager for months. And I finally asked if I could have a job, if I could work for you. I'd work for free. I just want to learn the business. And one day he gave me a chance. And that was sort of my moment. I had done an Adidas commercial down at Notre Dame for a Notre Dame versus Michigan football game. And we had all access on the field, in the locker room. And I was just an assistant. I mean, I was fetching coffee. I was just trying not to get in the way. And, you know, my title was location assistant. So I was assisting locations department. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was happy to be there. And then shortly after that, my name was passed to the team that does the Transformer movies. And I went in for an interview to be a location assistant on that team. And I got the job. And that was the real project that sort of really hooked me. I think one of the reasons I got the job was this was Transformers 3, and they shot all over the world. And one of the big locations was Chicago. And they spent all summer filming here. And I think they liked my resume for the fact that I had hotel experience, because with a movie that scale and that size, the amount of logistics that go into it, and the street closures and the explosions and the low flying helicopters right in the downtown Chicago, you know, they liked the idea that I could speak hotel language. So I was sort of assigned to liaise with all the hotels in the area, come up with plans to assist guests that might be inconvenienced, you know, walking out of the hotel to jump in the cab to go to the airport or, you know, explore the city, you know. So there was a lot of communication that was needed with these entities. And they liked my background for my time at Hyatt, and that got me in the door. And from here on out, I've been slowly working my way up in the industry. You know, it's brought me to Los Angeles, New York, the Carolinas, back to Chicago, and you know, the idea is every day you learn something new. And it's been just over 10 years since I started, and I'm still in it.
But now you're a location manager.
Correct.
Right. So at what point did you transition from an assistant to being the manager?
Yeah, you know, so much of it is timing. You know, I have been a key assistant location manager. So basically, the way it sort of outlines the hierarchy of this department is you've got at the top, you've got a location manager, or sometimes a supervising location manager. And then you've got key assistant location managers, assistant location managers, location assistants. And then in there is also location scouts, which a lot of times location managers and key assistant location managers are scouts as well. So you wear that hat every day. You're always scouting. So when I transitioned up, it was just, you know, your experience, your ability to lead a team, your ability to work with others and collaborate with the creatives, you know, your ability to problem solve. So much of this is problem solving day in and day out. So I think that you have to be at a point mentally that you're willing to do the job. And when that time came, it was sort of a perfect time. I felt that the time was right, felt confident in taking on that role. And you got to just sort of jump when that moment happens. And that's exactly what I did.
And what was the film or show that you were working on during that transition?
It was a one season show for USA Network titled Pearson. And it was a spinoff from the really popular show Suits. And they came to Chicago to shoot that series.
You mentioned the importance of working on the Transformer movie and really what that meant for you and your career. Do you remember that specific moment that you realized that you landed in the right career, that this is what I was meant to be doing moment?
I think given the fact that I was younger, I should say, when you go to work every day and you're shutting down Wacker Drive or Michigan Avenue and you're blowing stuff up every day and you're having gun battles out in the streets, and, you know, it's a special opportunity to be a part of something like that. You know, those kind of films are incredibly challenging to pull off, to produce, the logistics alone, the prep time. I mean, years to shoot a movie, you know, the inception of it to the completion. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of gut. And I think just being around that sort of atmosphere and that energy, it was unlike anything I had ever been a part of. It was certainly a lot different than sitting in a cubicle. And I think at that point, I had sort of made my decision that this is what I want to do, and I want to learn everything about it and see if I can make a go of this.
When you began working on film sets, what surprised you the most about the behind-the-scenes production?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that what your average person might not understand is the amount of people and money it takes to do this stuff, you know, and also the logistics. I mean, you have so many talented people in their various departments and their paths, all working together to collaborate to create this content. And the professionalism that exists is amazing, but there are challenges. What you do with the challenges is incredible on every level and every department, because there's always going to be changes. There's always going to be hurdles. There's going to be problems that arise. And just adapting to that with plan Bs and fixing the problems that go into this stuff. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, I always say that the work environment is controlled chaos, especially to an outsider who might open their doors and look at what comes with this, the 30 semi-trucks, the actor trailers. Sometimes we'll have 500 extras on a set. I mean, it's, you know, you got to places to put them. You've got to have a place that everyone can park. Every detail is as important as the next. And if, you know, if everything goes right, you know, you make your day. That's what it's all about. And I think that for an outsider, I think just the scale of what comes with, you know, professional filmmaking, I think that's always the biggest surprise for people, is just the amount of people and the money. I mean, this is big time stuff, and there's money to back it. Not always, but it's expensive to produce good content these days.
When a project is about to be filmed, at what point do they contact you to begin scouting?
Every show is a little different. The longest show I ever did was 1 year. You know, I had started scouting on it almost 6 months prior to the first day of production. And then you have others where sometimes you only get 2 weeks. And there's so many challenges on a short timeline, but you figure it out. And, you know, you rely on your knowledge of the city and what can work, what can't. But depending on the content, depending on the story, depending on the project, sometimes you need that long prep time, that long scouting time, because, you know, the locations could be a really challenge to get or to find. A lot of times the contract negotiations can go back and forth and not happen in a speedy manner, which, hey, it's the real world. That's how it works. And sometimes you get lucky, but I think every project sort of is different. Going back to sort of these big blockbuster tentpole movies like a Transformers or a Batman or Marvel movies, you know, you're starting, they have a scout starting on these projects a year out at least. And with that, there's a reason, you know, there's a lot to be put into this stuff, and they want to make sure that creatively we're going down the right direction. You know, you want the production designer to have their input, and you want to make sure that you're working together in a way that when the time comes and you get closer to that day one of shooting, that, you know, you hope that everything's in line and your plan is being implemented.
When choosing locations for an upcoming project, what's your process in finding spaces that are aligned with the vision of the writer and director?
Yeah, I mean, it's a massively collaborative process. The role of the production designer is to create the look and feel of what you see on camera. And that we collaborate with that person very much. You know, they'll have their opinion on what they want, and it's our job to go out and find it. You know, we want to make that person happy. We want to give them what they're looking for, as well as the director and the writers. They all have their say as well. And they all work together. There are disagreements about the look of things or the location of things, but that's part of the process. Things are talked out, discussed, and you have your favorites, you have your second favorites, you have your third favorite options. But the process is that, you know, we get the notes on what they want. You know, we dissect the script ourselves. We break it down as to, you know, what's going to be on location, what's going to be built on a soundstage, what sort of feel are we looking for, how far away is it going to be? Because that affects everything. If you might find the perfect location that's far away, but, you know, maybe it's not worth going that far of distance because of other reasons. When you are at that point of securing location and pairing locations together, a lot of times, you know, you're pairing locations together for logistical reasons. That might be a cost-saving approach with not having to move the entire company, as we call it, which are all the trucks and the working trucks where all the equipment is on, as well as the base camp, which is where the office trailers are, the actor trailers, the hair and makeup. You know, there's a lot of benefits in not having to move that stuff if you don't have to. So we get tasked with finding locations in close proximity of each other. And you know, you might have the perfect bar, but you don't have the most perfect apartment building. So you have to sort of realize that. And, you know, you're always trying to find the perfect location. It's always on top of mind for every location manager. But sometimes you're going to have to collaborate in a way that, you know, you have to make a tough choice. Do you want that first choice? Do you want that second choice? But you have the perfect one for that other location, if that makes sense. And, you know, the process of securing a location is, you know, you go out and scout. You come up with as many options as you can for what's needed. And then you sort of compile the photographs that you've taken in a manner that makes sense when pitching them to a production designer. Every production designer is different. Some production designers love to see 3 to 5 photos of a location, and others want to see 100 photos of a location. By getting to know these people, you realize what they want. A lot of times they'll tell you what they want. But you sit down and you go over them, call it sort of a photo review. And, you know, in those meetings, we find out what they like, what they don't like. And that helps us immensely because it's telling us what we're doing in the direction that works and what we're not doing that doesn't work. From that point, when we think we have a good amount of options, we then go to the director. And at the end of the day, the director has final say with influence from the production designer. And let's say we make a decision, and this is after multiple trips to the location with the director themselves and the production designer and the producers and the writer, tour these places before a final decision is made. And we're very generous for all of the location owners and reps that have let us in and have worked with sort of our last minute request to pop in and take a look. That is always appreciative. And I'm very thankful for that. But once we sort of sign off and the director gives the green light, then the work begins. Scouting is only a certain part of it, and you win in the details. And once we have that final decision, we'll then go and sit down with the owners, and we discuss what the plan is. And sometimes we don't know what the plan is. We just know that we want to film a scene here.
How often do you need to scrap a location once filming begins because of the way it looks on the camera or after a scene is finally carried out?
You know, you would think that we scrap locations all the time, but you don't have the luxury to do that. It's very expensive, like I said, to produce this stuff each day. It has happened, but it's very rare where you've shown up, you filmed, and then all of a sudden you realize it's not what they were looking for or it didn't work at the end. Now, reshoots are a different thing. If you want to talk about reshoots, that's sort of a process where a film has been put together and there's some elements that might not work from the editing. Maybe they've thought of a new scene or they think they need something to add or something didn't work originally. And yeah, they'll come back and at a later date a lot of times and get those reshoots in. And that sort of element happens pretty regularly along the feature film side of it. More on the television side, not so much, because the television side is a moving train. The whole idea is to get those episodes done because your window is so short that, you know, a lot of times you don't have the luxury to get reshoots in.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how working on a set for a television program is different from film. So there's definitely more pressure to just push along.
Yeah, you know, they are different. Not to diminish a feature film, that's incredibly hard as well. But you're essentially shooting one-hour movies every 10 to 15 days. And whereas on a film set, you know, you've got 40 straight days a lot of times on your average movie to shoot it. And on TV, you're doing, let's say, 10 episodes, 10 to 15 days. It's a lot. You're constantly prepping and wrapping. And then, oh yeah, you're also shooting. So you are incredibly mindful of what's to come. And a lot of times scripts aren't finalized or there's rewrites. And you're getting this stuff in a manner that, you know, you wish you had the detail of it sooner, but it doesn't work that way a lot of times, you know, so you're scrambling to secure locations, you're scrambling to wrap out, and you're looking ahead to the next episodes. So in that regard, it's a lot of work. It takes a village. And, you know, when, and then feature films, you get so much sort of prep time where, you know, you sort of win in prep. You have a lot more time to work out all the details in advance, and in TV, you just roll with it. You do the best you can because things change all the time on a TV set.
Yeah, and I remember you describing the intensity of filming the Netflix show Sense8 compared to what you just described in The Dark Knight Rises, all of which were filmed in Chicago and a number of other locations.
Yeah, you know, I worked on the Chicago portion of Sense8, and talk about a show that logistically impressive. They shot all over the world. And while you're here shooting in Chicago, there is someone prepping another country for the transition from when they wrap a city, they go immediately to the next city, ready to go. It takes a lot of work to do that. That was an impressive one. You know, we just did the portion in Chicago, which is, you know, just one aspect of that show. And shout out to Marco Giacalone, supervising location manager on that project. He knows what he's doing. He's the best.
It seems that at one time, Hollywood mostly shot on film sets at a permanent or temporary location. Why and how did this evolve into what we see today in film and television, where you're filming at multiple locations?
Yeah, you know, I recall back in the 50s is when they started leaving the sound stages and went on location to start filming movies. And it wasn't until the 70s where my role as a location manager became a thing. You know, it used to be a producer's job. And I think the producers were like, I don't want to do this. This is hard. And that's sort of how the location manager department or role became a thing back in the 70s.
You probably have worked with an incredible number of talents. Who have you enjoyed working with the most along the way?
It's a really, really good question, really hard question to answer, because one of the beauties of this job, unlike an average job, is you'll work with a group of people, whether you like them or not. And then there's an end date to it. And then you get to work with a whole new set of people. There's a lot of fun in that. I think it keeps your approach to the job fresh. You know, there are amazing, talented people that work in this industry that are incredible storytellers. You know, some of my favorite people, I think if they're listening, they would know who they are. I don't want to name names, because I'm afraid of leaving people out. But yeah, there's a lot of really, really good people that I owe a lot to and that have taught me, and you know, I'm continuing to learn, and something I hope to pass down.
I tried acting in college for a year and a half, and I received most improved actor, and surely my career in acting ended unfortunately, but it did change the way I viewed movies. How does being a location manager change the movie watching experience for you? Do you tend to dissect each scene now?
I do. I try not to, but I certainly, I'm a fan first, but if there's something that I'm really drawn to, I want to know how they did it. I'm curious, you know, and I think that there's some amazing examples of films that have been made that blow my mind from a logistical standpoint. I mean, you look at what all these new Mission Impossible movies and Mission Impossible Fallout and the ability to pull a project like that off. I'm very curious, and it's fun to think about where those places are and research how they found them and what was available. And yeah, I'm always looking, and I'm also always looking when I'm in my car. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I'm looking out the window driving, not even thinking, and just consciously thinking that would be a great film set, or this would be a great location. And a lot of times that's how it works. You know, you sort of take a mental note of place, and you hope that there's some good scenes or good content that might pose a good option.
You mentioned Mission Impossible. What are some of your other favorite movies based on how the locations were woven into the storyline?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, that's tough, you know. I think what's more impressive, the fact that you can pull off a location and be something completely different, or shoot in a real life place and tell your story that way. I think both can be celebrated. You know, I'm a huge fan of realism. I think there's nothing better than shooting on location. And you know, you go back to Michael Mann, who is a director that comes to mind, and you know, his material is, you know, so realistic in his approach and how he wants it portrayed on screen. And you know, you look at the movie Heat that he did, for example. Talk about a movie that showcases LA from sort of an underbelly, under police and bad guy point of view. You know, you look at movies like Sicario, for example, that are so woven in realism that, you know, you do feel like you're there with them on location in some of these really scary places. And I think when you're able to sort of direct and have a project that woven, you know, that lends itself to that feeling as a audience member, I think that's a great thing. You know, locations are amazing. You know, there's nothing better than getting into a really challenging or hard to get or hard to secure place and being able to film. We get a lot of gratification for that.
You mentioned the movie Heat, one of my favorite films of all time, and especially the scene where Al Pacino and Robert De Niro meet in the diner. And as classic of a scene as that is, the location itself doesn't scream action movie, but it couldn't be any more important in terms of carrying the scene. So not just having Al Pacino and Robert De Niro there, but the two of them talking in that environment at that point of the storyline. It's how it's woven into the story that probably gives it the most value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, if you find a great location and it makes these actors really step up their work, you know, everything's connected. We can find a great location. Maybe we get that extra bit out of an actor and putting them into that situation, in that environment, for sure.
I want to kind of pull away from you and your day-to-day and just kind of talk about the industry as a whole again. Are there any current trends or patterns right now that will change the future production of film and television?
Well, I think the coronavirus might have a little bit to do with that. You know, I think that this is sort of just what my opinion might be. And, you know, I think we're living in a world of the streaming content is very much a focus in our industry. You know, you don't have the traditional seasons, scheduled seasons as you would with network television. And I also see, you know, whereas the feature film and the movie side of it is still making movies, but it seems as though that the big blockbuster films are what you go to the movies for. And then you've got this $200 million budget film and up, and then you've got sort of that $60 million and under categories. And then there seems to be something missing in the middle that seems to be lacking these days. And I think that you're seeing a lot of amazing creators, writers, taking their stories that might not get made into a feature film, and they're taking that story and they're saying, well, what if we draw it out? What if we make it a long form story and we put it on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon and we tell it over the course of 9 episodes? I think that that's exciting for creators. I think that, you know, actors, writers, directors find, I think there's some opportunity there to really, really tell your story in a way that doesn't have to be 2 hours. It can be 10 hours. And I think that there's amazing content that's out there that's going to be made, but there's always going to be amazing stuff. And I think that that's sort of a trend I see happening, is getting the ability to get this stuff made if you're able to provide 2, 3, 4 seasons of it. That's sort of the trend I see.
I always thought for a television series, they only film one part of the season, and based on the response, they'll pivot in some way for the filming of the second half. Was that true at one point?
You know, you never know. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I'm in the room doing these negotiations, but it's, you know, I think that in order to get your project made, they want us to be able to see a story arc that will yield multiple seasons. Now, whether that happens or not is ultimately decided by the network, and they have their reasons for cancellations and reasons for approvals. But, you know, I think that you want to be able to show the value in your content and how you can tell a story over multiple seasons. I think that just helps the process.
Yeah. And now you've mentioned this new way of storytelling and also streaming. Amazon and Netflix are now a big part of the film scene. So how have they actually changed the landscape of the industry?
They're being competitive, right? I think in that regard, you know, you're able to watch a new release movie right on your couch. And I think that could be a game changer down the road. You know, I think that the industry right now is a lot of questions. Movie theaters are an amazing experience. And, you know, I hope that after this, the world gets back to normal, that's something that is still a thing that we do. But I think that you have to be prepared to also be weary of that environment. And I think that you're able to watch a new release, say for $30, you rent it. I think that there's a potential there. I'm sure that there's a ton of different business models that have been put together about the pros and cons for that sort of approach. But yeah, I can see that happening. And I think that when Netflix is producing their own feature films and they have premiere date scheduled, and once that date hits, you can watch it right on your couch. I think that's it's amazing. We live in a society where we all have big TVs now, and you know, you're in the comfort of your own home. And I think that that's a very attractive idea.
I wonder how that changes the approach for many directors who think of showing their film on a big screen, not just a television screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think filmmakers have a passion for the art, and you know, it's meant to be seen on a big screen. And I hope that that's always the case.
Let's talk about one piece that we haven't mentioned yet, which is that you're an incredible photographer. And I personally want to know, what typically draws you to a shot? Do you have a specific style or thing that you look for?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the nice words. Certainly try. You know, I think that when you approach photography for work, you have a specific goal in mind on how to shoot a location. I think for my personal photography, you know, I do my best to tell a story. And also, if something attracts my eye in a way that I think it looks visually appealing, you know, I want to photograph it. You know, I try not to get too in the weeds with editing photos, but, you know, I don't know if I have a style. I just know what I like. And I think that there's beauty everywhere. I think there's really interesting images that can exist. I challenge people, if they're into photography, to try to find your eye. You know, go out there and give yourself challenges. And maybe one day you're only going to shoot, you know, old farm barns, or, you know, you're going to shoot vintage cars, or you're going to go down on Michigan Avenue and photograph the street vendors. I think if you have a goal of what you want to do, that's a big win, because a lot of times people don't know what they want to shoot. And I think you know when you find it, but I think getting out there and getting in the routine and constantly looking, having an eye and teaching yourself to have an eye, is so much of it.
Well, thank you for giving us such an intricate look into your day-to-day life as a location manager. And I wanted to finish out with a couple questions. As you know, my almost 3-year-old son, Preston, loves his Uncle Stu. What is one lesson that you would share with him?
Oh, well, I would first say to Preston to listen and respect your parents. When you get older, make sure you call them, call your mom. I always say, call your mom. Well, you know what? I would say to Preston, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to take a chance. My mom always said, tomorrow is promised to no one. And I think that if you have that mentality, and it's okay to make mistakes, I think you learn so much from that. And, you know, that's what I would say to Preston.
Where can people find you to learn more about you? Where can they go to say hi to you on social media? Is there anything you like for them to check out in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a big lover of Instagram. You can definitely find me at Stu Locations, S-T-U Locations. And I'm actually in the middle of revamping my website, which is stulocations.com. I think some of this work from home moments right now are giving me a great opportunity to get caught up on that. But yeah, that should be the new website should be launching fairly soon.
Well, we'll be excited to see that. And I just want to say thank you again for your time today. It's been a while since we've seen you. Hopefully, we'll see you again before 2021.
Michael, thank you so much, man. This has been a fun afternoon. And yeah, I hope we do get to see each other soon. Let's keep our fingers crossed. You know, we'll have to swap shelter-in-place quarantine stories and tips and tricks on the next one.
No doubt, no doubt. Okay, so I wish the best for you and your industry, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, Mike. Thank you.
If you find this podcast interesting, there are many ways you can support it. You can review the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen on. You can share it on social media with your friends. You can blog about it or discuss it on your own podcast. Or you can read the show notes on michaelmoodyfitness.com. Thank you for supporting the show. Listeners like you make it worthwhile.